Welcome to the ASHP Official Podcast, your guide to issues related to medication use, public health, and the profession of pharmacy.
Thanks for joining us in this episode of Hot Topics in Specialty Pharmacy, where we chat with practitioners and leaders to discuss topics relevant to specialty pharmacy workforce, business practice, and our profession. My name is Anna Muscarella, and I am an infectious disease pharmacist at Vanderbilt University Medical Center with Vanderbilt Specialty Pharmacy. And joining me today is my colleague, Chelsea Renfro, clinical pharmacist for research and engagement at Vanderbilt Specialty Pharmacy as well. In this episode, we'll be discussing development and implementation of a collaborative practice agreement, something near and dear to my heart within an integrated health system specialty pharmacy. So welcome, Chelsea.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
First, can you tell us a little bit about where you work and what your role is?
Absolutely. So I'm a research and engagement pharmacist on the health outcomes and research team at Vanderbilt Specialty Pharmacy. And in my role, I really work with our clinical pharmacists across 25 different clinics on research projects to show the value of our integrated health system specialty pharmacy model and really what that provides for patient care. I engage with external stakeholders to really share our value story and collaborate on different research projects where we have overlapping priorities.
We are so lucky to have Chelsea as part of our team and excited that our focus today will be primarily on one of her projects, which was a qualitative analysis on developing and implementing a collaborative practice agreement within an integrated health system. For those that don't know, at Vanderbilt, we do have a collaborative practice committee that manages all of our collaborative practices across the institution, and several of our agreements are within the Vanderbilt Specialty Pharmacy team. As a team, we are integrated into the clinic, so we do play a vital role in making sure that patients are able to obtain therapy, that they can afford therapy, and then while they're on therapy, that they're doing well. We have a great group of providers that we get to work with, so having collaborative practice agreements definitely elevates our practice. And Chelsea, I'd love to hear if you can tell us a little bit about how this project came to be and how it started.
Absolutely. I'd love to. So first, thank you so much for really setting up the background for CPAs at Vanderbilt. I think that's really going to help understand more about how this project came to be and started. So this project really came to be as a way to document and analyze qualitatively. So instead of quantitatively really using numbers, those aspects of developing and implementing collaborative practice agreements that are not able to be captured quantitatively. So there's a growing number of health systems developing integrated specialty pharmacies that provide comprehensive specialty medication management, really from helping patients access specialty medications to monitoring and optimizing treatment options. So the 2022 ASHP Health System Specialty Pharmacy Practice Clinical Services Survey, that's a mouthful, over half of the 90 HSSP respondents had at least some specialty pharmacists operating under a collaborative practice agreement. So that's a great number. And while we could find ample research on the development and implementation of CPAs in the ambulatory care setting, limited research really exists on the development and implementation of CPAs within a specialty pharmacy setting. So really knowing that they're occurring in health system specialty pharmacy practice, we really wanted to showcase what's being done in this space, especially around the implementation of CPAs, which lends itself to qualitative analysis nicely. Later on, I'm going to share some great quotes that we were able to collect from physician champions, which I don't think we would have been able to collect quantitatively or really through that free text in a survey.
As you said, it is very common to have collaborative practice agreements within the primary care and ambulatory care spaces. And because of the way that payer networks are set up, metrics are set up, it's sometimes easy to try to focus your collaborative practice efforts on those things that will help you with your metrics and also will allow for payment of pharmacists and billing of pharmacy services. So I'm really interested to hear, in developing this study, what were some of the top priorities or goals that you were hoping that it would achieve?
Yeah, that's a great question. So on the top priorities when developing this study, it was really to understand the barriers and facilitators to implementing the collaborative practice agreement. And we really, you know, wanted to look across all six of our integrated specialty pharmacy clinics at Vanderbilt University Medical Center. I know now we even have more than six clinics that have collaborative practice agreements, but at that time we only had six. And we just really wanted to understand what went well and what were some barriers potentially to implementing that, because if we're able to expand this and we're wanting to expand this out within Vanderbilt, but also other health system specialty pharmacies, we really wanted to understand how that worked. And we really think the findings from this study can help others implement CPAs in their setting. And then, as I mentioned, we also plan to use these findings to help guide the implementation of CPAs in other clinics at Vanderbilt. So really, based on this goal, the purpose of the study was to describe the development and implementation of CPAs within an integrated health system specialty pharmacy. So to do that, we conducted a phenomenological qualitative study. And with that, we had focus groups, and we conducted those with leadership as well as clinical pharmacists where a CPA had been implemented within their clinic. We also conducted semi-structured interviews with physician champions who were involved in the development and implementation of CPAs.
Something that many of you may or may not know about qualitative studies is you really do, as Chelsea mentioned, get to capture things that are very difficult to demonstrate with just showing quantitative numbers. So Chelsea, can you tell us what are some of the themes that you found in your study around the development and implementation of collaborative practice agreements?
Yeah. So our study found four overarching themes. The first one is really centered around patient care. So all participants really felt like having that CPA in place improved the time from treatment decision to patients receiving that specialty medication. And then physicians believed having a CPA made workflow more efficient. It allowed them to provide higher quality care. So one of the quotes, and I really like this quote, so I wanted to provide it. They stated, "I feel like the pharmacists are able to enhance and increase the quality of care that I can deliver. If it were just me, myself, independently, I would have to drastically decrease the quantity." So they're not going to decrease the quality, but decrease the quantity of the care that they're providing. And I feel like that's one of the best compliments that you can receive from having a collaborative practice agreement or just having working together as a team to provide patient care, is that you're able to help them improve the quality of care that they're providing. So the next theme that we found was compatibility. So the CPA was found to be compatible with our current clinic process. So as Anna mentioned earlier, the pharmacists are integrated into the clinic setting. So having those clinical specialty pharmacists integrated really allows for that rapport and to build relationships between the embedded clinical pharmacists and physicians, but also really that clinic staff prior to CPA implementation. Our third theme we found, acceptability. So the CPPA had been accepted by physicians and clinics as pharmacists are able to help by ordering labs, writing prescriptions, and among other clinic tasks. So another quote here that I really liked, a physician champion stated, "It's been one of the few changes in clinic that has been universally accepted by our group." And like I said, again, I feel like that's another glowing recommendation from a physician about something that's universally accepted by their physician group. And then that last theme that we found was really around implementation support. So the need for support during implementation from those outside of the clinic workflow. So for example, health system specialty pharmacy leadership, if there was a PGY1 resident, clinic leads, those all were noted as being important for implementation. So for example, one clinical specialty pharmacist stated, "If we didn't have our former PGY1 resident to help us get it all set up, given all the other things that we had to deal with in clinic, it would have been extremely hard to do." So I think a lot of times whenever we're implementing a service, whether that be collaborative practice agreements or any other service, a lot of times we want to be relying on all of those who are in the clinic to do that and not thinking about all the other things that they're needing to do. So thinking about the support system that might be needed to implement a service. So I think those were the four overarching themes that we found. So patient care, compatibility, acceptability, and the need for implementation support. So I have a question now for you, Anna. Beyond the study findings, what challenges or obstacles have you identified in clinical practice when implementing collaborative practice agreements? Because I know you've been boots on the ground implementing collaborative practice agreements in multiple different settings.
Yeah, I love the themes that you shared. And those quotes are just so wonderful to hear.
I love them.
Yes, so great. And just really honored that we get to work with such wonderful physicians and folks that are in the clinic with us that are helping us to implement all of these really innovative services. As far as challenges and obstacles, we've been pretty lucky in the sense that most of the clinics that we have tried to implement collaborative practice in, most of the time, pharmacists are already doing essentially without having formal legal contracts in place and formal documentation in place, some of these activities. So it was much of the time a very easy discussion and conversation of here's the different activities that you can perform under collaborative practice. Now here is the workflow and the framework that you can actually do this in. So I don't think that the implementation part itself was really the challenge. I think in a bigger picture and on a bigger scale, what is more challenging is figuring out how can we tie this work and this effort to a billable service for pharmacists. I think that we're some ways away from that. Chelsea and I both work in the state of Tennessee, which does have provider status, but we've been slow to uptick that at Vanderbilt and at some other institutions, you know, around the state. But I do think that finding ways to tie this to billable encounters, finding ways where pharmacists can actually bill for their services, not only just seeing patients in clinic, but also with phone encounters and documentation, and how can we demonstrate the value of what we're doing in a way that can be tied to a dollar amount. I think that's a really big challenge, and there are some unique and innovative ways that we can do that. We're exploring some of those things at Vanderbilt right now, but I would say that that's probably been one of the biggest challenges. Is this does take a lot of work to do. So how are we keeping track of that? How are we using that to demonstrate or justify additional services? I think that's a great benefit, but also a great challenge that we've kind of experienced in our clinics. And then I think also just getting all staff familiar with what can be sent to the pharmacist to actually perform collaborative practice agreement activities under, and making sure that everyone's on the same page. Again, that is maybe not as much of an issue because our clinics are so used to having pharmacists in them, but just developing a workflow that makes the most sense in the clinic is probably maybe just a more logistical challenge than not.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. And I really liked where you brought in the statement about billing. And I know that was something that was a little bit beyond the scope of this specific study, but hopefully we'll be able to come back for a podcast in the future to potentially discuss that.
Yes, and we have some great colleagues all throughout ASHP that I think are doing pharmacy billing. So that would be great. I would love to do that. Well, in just this whole discussion, talking about the different themes that you found and outlining your study, can you tell us just what have been kind of the key takeaways from what you found in your study?
Yeah, that's another great question. So I believe some of the key takeaways from this study were that having that structure of the integrated health system specialty pharmacy, really where the pharmacist and the pharmacy technicians are embedded within the clinics to manage those specialty medications, that allows for CPAs to be easily integrated into workflow. I think that really kind of ties nicely with what we found. It was integral for the relationships to be developed with the clinical pharmacist and the physician and the clinic staff prior to the implementation of the CPPA. So really having that structure helped have them really be open to that. So I think relationships, and I know as pharmacists, we're great at building relationships with either whether it be patients or with the providers or with other clinic staff. So I think having that opportunity to be in the clinic and seeing them in person really, really helped have the CPPA. You're already building those relationships and the rapport. And then lastly, it really allowed our pharmacists to work to the top of their license. And I think that's something, you know, we hear a lot out there working to the top of the license with CPAs. But I think the key takeaway from this is we're working to the top of our license and it's improving patient care. Because in the end, that's really what it's all about. So anything else that you'd like to add about CPAs from the practice side?
I think from just to conclude, I mean, I think that was so great what you said, but just to conclude, I really want to just bring it back to the ASHP survey that you mentioned, where a pretty large percentage of respondents did mention that they're using collaborative practice in some way within an integrated health system specialty pharmacy. And most of the time, these pharmacists are embedded or have relationships with clinics that are seeing patients with specialty disease states, complex disease states. So I'm just really excited and admire that we have so many colleagues that are doing this, that are participating in this, and hope that we will see more data, more literature, qualitative or quantitative in the future that will support pharmacists' activity in these clinics, collaborative practice in these clinics, and other ways that we can benefit patients in their care. So I think that's all the time that we have today, but I want to thank you, Chelsea, so much for joining us today to discuss your study. If you haven't before, I would encourage all of you that are listening to check out ASHP's online resources for specialty pharmacy practitioners at ashp.org. You can find member-exclusive offerings such as the Specialty Pharmacy Resource Center, which includes examples of best practices, business development resources, and more. Thank you all so much for joining us for this episode of Hot Topics in Specialty Pharmacy. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to ASHP Official, the voice of pharmacists advancing healthcare. Be sure to visit ashp.org/podcast to discover more great episodes, access show notes, and download the episode transcript. If you loved the episode and want to hear more, be sure to subscribe, rate, or leave a review. Join us next time on ASHP Official.